Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we unpack the big political stories of the week. My name is Mike Siluma. Let's welcome my guest this week, Mawanda Mashabalala, Sunday Times political journalist, and Sibonga Konke Wakashoba, Sunday Times politics editor. Leading our top stories this week will be the appearance of President Cyril Ramaphosa before the State Capture Commission, and then we will also be looking at the latest in relation to the step-aside saga that's playing itself out in the ANC. And lastly, we'll ask, what use are qualifications in politics? You know, why has the DA tied itself in knots trying to deal with the issue of qualifications for some of their members?
This aircon is racist.
I've never, ever been a spy.
Can the DBS bank loot?
The problem is that pinky.
I'll never subject myself to white men.
Order!
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Can you please come
on the
in?
Point of order.
Let's start at the commission. We're happy to welcome once more Mawanda Mashabalala. You've been watching the president's presentation at the commission, Mawanda. But why was he there? What was the purpose of his being there for 2 days?
Thanks very much, Pramak, for the invite once again. Well, the president was there for two simple reasons. One, as a former deputy president of the ANC, you would remember that he was elected to that position in 2012 until 2017 when he was elected as president. And then also now as the president of the ANC since 2017. On his cap as then the ANC former deputy president, he was there to account on all the allegations of state capture that happened during the time in which he was deputy president of the party, as to what did the party do at the time, and him personally as a member and a leader of the party, what did he do to try to stop all the issues of the Guptas who had influence over government contracts, over government decisions, over appointments in government and state-owned companies. And now he was there as the current president of the ANC to tell the commission as to what he has done, what his party has done since 2017, having been in charge since then, which is about 3 years now, because you'd remember that the conference that elected him had acknowledged that there is this problem of corruption and state capture, had actually emphasized and pushed for the establishment of the commission when there was a bit of skepticism by then ANC president, former president Jacob Zuma. So those were mainly the areas that the commission wanted to canvass, of course, broken down into different small things from my.
Now, Mawanda, I wanted to ask you, you asked two questions. The question that relates to, first, what did he do as deputy president, and what he did, what he's doing now as president of the ANC. Let's start with the, for now, with what did he do, to answer the question, what did he do as deputy president? Did we get a clear answer there? In other words, what did he do to stop state capture as deputy president?
Well, of course, there are mixed feelings there from people generally when one observes. And you know, also one, when he was listening to him, you would see that somewhere he does take... Of course, what I must say that I comment from the president of the ANC about what he did as the deputy president of the ANC is that he admits at least, unlike some, that there was state capture and corruption. And then he goes on to say where he was directly involved. For instance, when he's asked about matters of him being the chairperson of the political committee in parliament and being the chairperson of the ANC deployment committee, where he's directly involved, he does admit that there were shortcomings in terms of how those particular structures conducted their business. And but he does justify such that, of course, at the time as a deputy president, you can only have so much power. If there is a president who was as powerful and fully had a hold on a party like former President Zuma, really, in all fairness, there's only very little that a deputy president who has ambitions to ascend to the top job of a president can do to stop them. So those are the things. But, you know, people may be a bit harsh and say, but you are supposed to do something, you are supposed to forget about his ambitions. But reality of politics is that when you are an ambitious politician, you will do everything to safeguard your ambitions. It's a matter now of debate as to whether is it morally, you know, astute to put your own interest ahead of those of the country. But then again, the question arises, had he put his, you know, the interest of the country ahead and starts challenging former President Zuma, would we be here to start with? Would he be president? Would we be having this commission that was taken because of his victory in Nazareth? So those are the questions, and it's a complexity of the whole issue. Of course, as I say, there's little that he did as deputy president to stop Zuma, but I think there is a justifiable justification as to he was waiting for his time, and at least now during his time we can see movements of trying to correct all the wrongs that went on under former President Zuma Prameka.
Do you want to come in here, man? Do you buy the proposition that has just been outlined by Mawande that he needed to keep his head low below the parapet and bide his time so that he can which would then put him in a position to challenge for the presidency when the opportunity came up, or should we be saying, though, even though he was deputy president, he should be able today to say, Mina, as deputy president of the ANC, I saw state capture and I tried to do the following things.
Pramak, if it was part of a long-term strategy, it's a long-term strategy that let the country down. It let all of us down. Because had President Cyril Ramaphosa spoken out when all these things were happening, some of them wouldn't have happened. Remember the time when President Zuma removed Pravin Gordhan. President Ramaphosa and other officials spoke out, and that gave us some kind of confidence that there are still people at Luthuli House who really care about the people and want to put us first, and who are willing to stop any wrongdoing. And for him to adopt that long-term strategy of being complacent and watching over Zuma run rampage, he really let the country down. And if this is how our politics are and how our politicians are supposed to operate in order to survive, then it's a real shame. And I think that Cyril Ramaphosa should have garnered enough courage to stand up to President Zuma, lobby as many ANC leaders as possible. We've seen that it is possible for that to happen. It did happen eventually, but I think that it should have happened much earlier.
Mawande, there are people who are saying that he got off. In fact, I saw two versions. The one version said Zondo turned the screws on Cyril Ramaphosa, I understand, particularly in relation to CADA deployment. And then I saw another view that said that he got off lightly, that he was handled with kid gloves. Well, what's your view? Do you think Deputy Chief Justice Zondo was, and the evidence leaders chose to, or they were in fact going soft on him because of his status as president?
Yeah, no, the views out there, Pramak, are quite interesting on this testimony. Just on a lighter note, I even had some people saying this was an audition for the Deputy Chief Justice, for the Chief Justice positions. But, you know, people will always talk. But in my view, Pramak, is that there was nothing wrong with how this thing happened. First of all, the commission had no reason to be hostile towards President Ramaphosa as a party leader, because for starters, especially as it relates to his role in the party, he has never in that commission been implicated personally. That is for one. So if someone is not implicated, there was never going to be a direct question. Well, he has been to a degree implicated about issues of Bosasa and his CR17 funding, but that is a debatable issue, an issue that is also undergoing court processes. So I wouldn't go there that much. But other than that, he has never been implicated to have been complicit as in to have been implicated. Yes, complicity is an issue of the whole ANC that they just stood there and watched as things went wrong. And I feel that the commission questioned President Ramaphosa on all the issues of complicity that affected him, and I feel that it questioned him on even issues that don't affect him as a party, the ANC as a whole. For instance, the issue of deployment committee is not an issue of an individual. It's an organizational issue. That structure doesn't have one person, it's got a couple of people. But he still accounted, of course, as you say, there's a view that he defended the party. I would have never expected any a party man, especially a sitting president of an organization, to disassociate himself completely from such an arrangement. He justified it, stating issues of transformation. But he did say that there are wrongs in the way in which cadre deployment is done in the ANC. He even gave solutions of what he is trying to do in his current administration, talking about the issue of professionalizing public service and all those issues. So I feel, Pramak, there was no kids' gloves. There was a bit of, grilling that went on. There were times where you could see that he struggles. He actually stutters and thinks hard before giving answers. Even on the issue of the CR17 campaign funding of his, the questions that he was asked, I felt that they were proper and they put him in a corner such that I feel, although he gave an answer that has been in the public domain, there were elements of new answers that are up for further scrutiny going forward by ourselves as the media and general public as a whole. So I feel it was quite a fair and a proper, appearance and the commission in itself conducted itself in a professional manner. There's no need to be hostile. It's not a court of law. The person was appearing to assist in a fact-finding mission, not to answer for wrongdoings that are alleged against him, of course, with the exception of the CR17, which he was questioned of. And many people, doomsayers, had said that it was most likely that the commission was going to evade asking him about the CR17, but he was asked, and that particular topic was traversed for a substantial amount of time. I felt that they gave it the time that it deserved for me.
So there were the in addition to the CR17 issue and the cadre deployment issue, there was also the issue of the role of the ANC in parliamentary oversight of the executive. What did he have to say about that?
Yeah, well, On that one, Pramak, I must say, that is one area where I was particularly not, satisfied with how we handled it. In fact, most of the time, I couldn't even make up what exactly he was trying to say, about Parliament. And I feel like that was the same with other ANC leaders that have appeared before on that particular question, such as the ANC National Chairperson, Gwede Mantashe. They make all sorts of excuses. They have this thing that they talk about, which they say was a decision that was taken a long time ago to make Parliament an activist Parliament. But one question that all of them, including President Ramaphosa, struggle to tackle on the issue of the failures and shortcomings of the ANC in Parliament is, why did it only take until 2017? You'd remember there is that burning question of the inquiry that was suggested by the TA as early as, I think, 2013, 2014, on establishing an inquiry of Parliament to probe the allegations against the Guptas. And at the time, the ANC rejected the proposal. The ANC, in fact, made a counter motion which said, no, let's leave these issues of the allegations of the Guptas and their shenanigans in the SOEs to state enforcement agencies. And he was questioned on that. And I feel the weakness with the counter motion, of course, they justified. President Ramaphosa says that decision was on the basis that the ANC itself didn't have the capacity, the investigative capacity to do these things. And also Parliament has its own shortcomings of restricted budget. So they felt that law enforcements and Chapter 9 institutions are better placed and more resources to do these things. But in my mind, what they forgot is that the same state institutions like the NPA, those were, they had heads of people who were beholden to the same guy who was alleged to be the mastermind of the state capture and corruption in public service. So I feel he really was underwhelming. He was not convincing at all. Like, as I say, all others like Kwedimantashe who have appeared in before. And I think that is where every ANC leader must take the fall, that they failed through parliament, which is packed by representatives, more than 250 at the time, who were elected by millions and millions of South Africans. They failed to do their job in holding their erratic president at the time accountable. And I feel President Ramaphosa failed dismally in addressing that question.
And then he apologized for the failures. Were you convinced by the apology, you know?
No, of course, Pramak, as I said already, that because he is not an implicated party, perhaps if he was an implicated party, I was going to say, no, the excuses don't fly. You know, because what I like about his apology, first of all, I like that he admits that these things did happen. He's not saying, no, but what is this state capture thing? This thing doesn't exist. He admits that state capture exists. He admits that corruption exists, and it did happen in the past administration. And then he makes apologies on behalf of the ANC. And you see, there's nothing as brave, Bramaik, and as painful as making apologies on behalf of... last time I checked, about a million ANC members and millions of its supporters and millions of its voters, because those are the people he was talking on whose behalf and apologizing for. Some of them, they are not even apologetic, especially those that are implicated, who continue to dismiss the issue of state capture, who continue to dismiss allegations of corruption. So I admired that. But most particularly, what was important for me is that he took and put his head on the block with specific issues, which I think will be critical. The solutions that he put on the table as to what the ANC that he leads is doing and is planning to do to make sure that this thing, the history doesn't repeat itself. For me, that was what was my takeaway, in that he has specific solutions that South Africans, if they are serious and want to see this country being led by upright people, can hold him accountable. For instance, next year, people can start asking to say, but when you appeared at the commission, you said the ANC has 1, 2, 3 as solutions to make sure that corruption and is kept and state capture doesn't happen again. How far have you done? And so on. 2023, when he goes to 2024 elections, say he gets the second term as ANC president, those are the questions that I feel South Africans must press him on and make him feel the pressure that you made a commitment. You made commitments that you will run things in a different way. So do as you said. So I think for me, that will be, that history is the one that will ultimately judge him personally as to his legacy as an ANC president.
Smawonke, Umawande is making reference to history not repeating itself and Cyril Ramaphosa making undertakings to fix things. Should we take him at his word?
I fully agree with Mawande. South Africans should hold him accountable. South Africans should ask him those difficult questions when he comes begging for votes at the next general elections even in these local government elections, when he comes to them and says, vote for the ANC, South Africans should ask him, why do we still have corrupt people in positions? What have you done? What steps have you taken to make sure that such people are not entrusted with public funds? And those are the questions that he should be able to answer when he goes there and have a proper plan to say, this is what I've done and this is what I plan to do going forward. Will he be able to win against a culture that is so entrenched within his own party? And it remains to be seen, by Mike. We are waiting to see if he'll be able to deliver on his promises.
And meanwhile, back at Luthuli House, there's a litmus test awaiting him with regards to the step aside resolution. What is likely to happen? How is that? Because now the time period, you know, the grace period, you know, which those who were supposed to step aside were given, has run out. What is likely to happen now?
Ramaik, the deadline was yesterday. The 30 days for Ismail Kashule expired on the 29th, and today is the 30th, and there is still no word from Luthuli House whether Ismail Kashule is going to step down or not. He has still not completed his consultation process. He has yet to meet with President, with former President Thabo Mbeki. He is yet to meet with former President Kgalema Motlanthe. So that means his consultation process has not been completed. And that is going to be his excuse if you were to call him now and ask him if he's going to step down or not. He's going to say, no, I am not done with this consultation process. And when I'm done, I'm going to go and inform the president. That's what he told us last week, that when he's done with talking to the former leaders, he will go and inform President Cyril Ramaphosa about his decision. But this is what is going to happen, Bramike. The list of people who are affected by the step-aside rule have reached Luthuli House, and that list will then be tabled before the National Working Committee on Monday for them to process it. And then we expect that next week we're going to have the National Executive Committee, which will then issue instructions about who should step aside. But there are still issues, Bramike, around how do you implement? What about the time frames? What about the cases of people who were accused of corruption before this rule came into effect? What about people who were accused of corruption in the 90s and in the 2000s? The people who served their time, what about them? Does it also apply to them as well? And also they need to iron out details about the period that someone steps aside. Do you wait for a court case, or do you set a time frame to say, no, you can only step aside for 6 months, and if your case has not been completed, then you can come back? So it's going to be it's still a long road to go, Bramike. And I know that Paul Mashatile is working on those details, and he will table them at the next NEC meeting.
You don't think that we will end up getting to the NGC without this issue being resolved? It seems to be taking so long and going round and round.
Remember, Mike, the decision for people to step aside was taken last day in August. And if you count, that's more than 6 months. And the way Cyril Ramaphosa presented the decision to us, it was as if it was something that's going to happen immediately. But
yeah.
It has taken quite a long time, and it also speaks to what Mawande has been talking about why decisions of the ANC take so long to be implemented. Take 5 years if you look at their decision to say parliament would be an activist parliament. It took them 4 or 5 years to do that. And now with this step aside, we can expect the same. Who knows? Maybe we'll reach the next conference and people would not have stepped aside.
Just before we close off, this issue that's brewing in the DA about qualifications, you know, leaders' qualifications. Mawande, do you think that academic qualifications should matter, or is this just a storm in a teacup?
No. They should, Pramike, especially among leaders, because leaders are a mirror to society. You know, we must never is seen to encourage a culture whereby the people from which the society, members of society mirror themselves on are seen to be, you know, uneducated. Education is very important, not only for increasing the prospects of formal employment, but just for, also encouraging and being a fertile ground for critical thinking, which would help this country in holding, especially the same politicians, accountable with critically thinking, with critical analysis of the decisions that they make in the positions that they are elected to. So issues of qualification, Bramike, they're important, which is why there is always, almost every year in this country, even outside politics, scandals of people having faked qualifications, having stated qualifications that they don't have, because those leaders themselves understand that, especially in South Africa, which had historical reasons where Black people were especially excluded from certain qualifications, and then there was that zeal in this democratic dispensation for everyone to school themselves. So it is very important, and when leaders fake or state qualifications that they don't have, it must be frowned upon. As it relates to the DA, the DA was correct in frowning upon their former leader now of the Western Cape, Bungos Matigizela, for stating a qualification that he did not have, or for keeping quiet because he has excuses about how that was stated, but he knew that he stated qualification that he doesn't have. Natasha Mazoni as well, the same spirit should have applied. also on the internet, her profiles. She stated a qualification that she doesn't have. And I feel the DA should have, applied the same spirit as it did with Marty Gizeda, who was held to account correctly. So, but it would seem that the DA, as it relates to its chief whip, is really going the direction of the ANC, where the ANC went under former President Zuma, where the position that you hold in the party guarantees you evasion of scrutiny and accountability. And I feel that is wrong, but the DA has been on this self-mutilation process in any case since the taking out of their former leader, Musa Maimane. So one is not surprised at all by the events unfolding in the DA. I think it's the beginning of the end for them.
Last word to you, Sibonga Wonke. Better education, better politics, just very quickly.
Of course, Bram, I fully agree with Mawande. You need leaders who, because they are the middle of society and they are also public figures and they are also role models to a certain extent to some people. And you need educated leaders in order for you to also encourage the youth to aspire to achieve certain levels in life, and we are a country with skills shortages. We've got the shortages of engineers and the ICT sector, and you need young people to aspire to go to universities and acquire these skills. And if you have leaders who show disregard for education, who ask people, what has your degree done for you, that's a real shame. Yeah. And the DA should be acting, as Mawanda is saying, against this chief whip, Natasha Mazoni, even for that comment as well.
Okay, all right. Folks, that's all we have time for on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly this week. I'd like to thank my guests, political journalist Mawanda Mashabalala, together with Sibonga Wonke Shoba, who's, of course, the Sunday Times Politics Editor. And by the way, catch our podcast on iono.fm, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay safe, sanitize, wear the mask, and avoid crowded places. My name is Mike Siluma, signing off.